Well, thank you for that fine introduction, Mr. Javier. And I don't know, it is not with too much joy and happiness for us, with my wife as well. It seems that there is no fitting words to say our happiness that we have been given the privilege to speak before you. It is a great honor, and also I would like to thank Mr. Leoker because he has given me a share of this report that I could share to you this morning. So first of all, I would like to give you the greetings that that we have from your brethren in the Philippines, particularly in our areas there. And Mr. Javier have mentioned how we have known each other for, maybe I should make some correction. It is not only 25 years, because even before Mr. Javier was called into the church, we have known each other. So, as far as the United Church of God in the Philippines is concerned, we from the Bacolod congregations are the pioneers, because during the time when we received the tape message that was given by Mr. Joseph Picatz, Senior, and if I recall right, what that was given in Atlanta, Georgia, when he mentioned there that the commandments and laws of God as a package was done away, that is the end of the rope for me. And since then, in Bacolod, there are 33 people who have separated from worldwide church on July of 1995. And from there on, up to now, which is 10 years later, there are about 600 people attending United Church of God in the Philippines. That is, of course, including their children. And the church in the Philippines is divided into four pastorates. We have two in Luzon, and one in Mindanao, and one also in the Visayas, the central part of the Philippines archipelago. And I am stationed in the Visayan Island with residence in Bacolod City. And in my care, we have four congregations in the Visayas and one in Malaysia. And I heard Mr. Earl Romer mention to me that you are now an international minister because you are not only attending the Philippines, but another nation as well. Now, the challenge that we have on our part, particularly my part and my wife, is the distances that we travel when we go to other areas of our congregations, particularly in Leyte. Because you said the Philippines is divided into so many islands. And in the central part of the Philippines, we have to travel day and night continuously to reach our other congregation, particularly in Leyte. And there are some of you there who have seen these people, particularly during the Feast of Tabernacles. So we have to take the challenge in traveling in order to comfort and to give encouragement to these people. That sometimes they felt discouraged. And they felt, I don't know, but still, what we can say to these people, despite of the difficulties and the hardship that we have, still, they continue on with the encouragement of the church and those who came to them to encourage them to continue on, to focus on that one direction, which is the kingdom of God. Because if we cannot have the abundance that you enjoy here in the United States, in the world tomorrow, we will have those things. Now the Visayas congregation have the lowest income compared to the other areas in the Philippines, particularly in Manila and Mindanao. And our acknowledgement receipt shows that the average tithes of the members there are way down below $1 a month. And so the reason why we spend on our part alone in our travels is much more bigger than the incomes that we have. At the very least, their faith is strong, and some of those who have been in the Philippines can attest to that. And we encourage these brethren to go on despite of the hardship and difficulties of life. And we are just waiting for the promise of God that eventually everything will be taken care of, particularly when Jesus Christ will come. Now, that is talking much about the Philippines, but we also have one challenge when we attend to the needs of our brethren in Malaysia, in Sabah, Malaysia. And so when we go to Sabah, we spent almost 2 weeks until we could come back because we cannot afford to travel by, you know, jet planes. We always look for the cheapest one, and that is we have to, although it would tax us very much on our, but nevertheless, we are still happy and be able to serve our brothers and sisters in that particular area of the Philippines. We are so thankful that the Home Office continues sending them the church publication and other printed materials for the Sabbath reading. And although some of those brethren over there cannot understand English because they preferred Malayan language and, of course, our own natives, which are Cebuano. But even then, whether it is Malayan language or Cebuano, I am also struggling to make them understand because I am not a Cebuano myself. I am an Ilonggo, that is another part of the island. Now, the difficulty of our brother and sisters in Sabah is not much more on their needs financially because many of them have their own jobs. But they are not yet recognized as permanent residents of that place. And they are surrounded with lots of limitations. They cannot go anywhere in any place that they wanted to go without somebody accompanying them from the company where they are working. So they are just limited, and that is the reason why many of them would like to attend the Feast of Tabernacles in Iloilo, because I am their pastor there, but because of that limitation, they cannot. And so there are some people who have a heart to help, and we are now trying to help these people to get their identification card to have them recognized as a legal residents of the place. Now, this is the big reason that we are facing as a challenge. Of course, there are some people in Sabah who have already got their ID, identification paper, so to speak, but they have to pay bigger amounts. Which are not legal, of course. It is a matter of, you know, knowing people who can help them process their papers. But in their list, they cannot be issued that identification paper unless they will adopt a name, a Muslim name, at that. And they got those names from dead people. Otherwise, they cannot be legalized in the place. So I just hope and pray that God will continue to inspire the leadership of the church to continue extending their help to these children of God over there. And we heartily appreciate the move of the Council of Elders when Mr. Baker was sent to the Philippines to oversee much of the responsibilities there. And we really appreciate the work of Mr. David Baker because of his way of handling the situation there. It is very much appreciated to all of us there. So I would, maybe we could just add some more of those things that I am talking to you right now. My wife already reminded me not to go more than what was required of me. So I will go on with another topic for now. As I have already mentioned, most of our members in the Philippines have met all these experiences in their lives, experiences which you do not experience here because of your affluence, your abundance in this part of the world. So I would like to ask one question here. Have you ever had one of those days when you were tired and discouraged, and on top of that, you did not feel very well? Some people never recover from those low times, and sometimes they make decisions that destroy their future. While nothing lasts forever, including difficulties and all the trials that we meet along the way in our journey to the kingdom of God, there are things that you can do to get back on top when you are tired and feel like quitting. Because in the Philippines, there are some instances that people would like to stop because of the limitation, particularly financial needs. But first, remember the experience of the prophet Elijah. For his life tells us that even the spiritual giants can get tired and discouraged, and at times not feel very well. The Bible tells us of Elijah's bout with the blues in 1 Kings chapter 19. And if you will read that chapter, brethren, you will find how Elijah struggled himself because of discouragement. And he felt like quitting. Now, the Bible tells us of this experience where Elijah had to battle with 450 prophets of the adversary, which is Baal. And he stood alone, a bulwark of courage and faith. Now, fire fell from heaven and vindicated the faith of that mighty man of old. We know who Elijah is. And however, what had happened the next day during that encounter there, the next day, Elijah did not make a very good show, for he was physically tired. And his weariness gave way to discouragement. In fact, if you will trace that particular chapter there, you will find that Elijah could not even face that godless woman there, Jezebel. So confronted by Jezebel, the prophet, the man of God, ran for his life and told God he was ready to quit. Now the life of Elijah tells us that there is a relationship between the physical, the spiritual, and the emotional in life. When Elijah became tired and discouraged, he forgot some important things, just as you might have done. Or I don't know, I hope I am wrong. He forgot how God had met him in bygone days and how God sent ravens to feed him at Cherith and how God sent him to Seraphim, where he miraculously healed the son of a widow there. And he forgot how God consumed the sacrifice, wood and stone, with fire. And so when Elijah was tired and discouraged, he just ran away and then crawled into a cave. There, God was looking for him. First came the wind, second, an earthquake, and then the lightning flashed across the sky. And finally, Elijah heard a small voice coming from God. God asked, "What are you doing here? You have a work to do." So the next time you feel like Elijah, crawling into a cave of gloom, just listened to that voice of God saying, "What are you doing? What are you doing?" Just like Elijah, it is just possible that you have forgotten some of the most important answers that God had given in your life. And second, here, when you are tired and discouraged and feel like quitting, remember Jonah, because the life of Jonah would also tell us that real happiness can be found only by doing the will of God. So there are a lot of Jonas that we have today who walk the streets of every large cities in the world. Men and women to whom God says, "What are you doing? Give me your heart. I have something for you to do." You know, but most and the great majority just turn and run as fast as they can. Just like Jonas, their lives now are filled with games, songs, cars, cameras, electronic gadgets, and so on. Maybe we have experienced least that in the Philippines because we have not so much of those things that you have here in America. So people are just have their time on those things. And the second day when we arrived here in LA, we had been privileged to visit the Universal Studios in Hollywood. And I was thinking how great the number of people there. How can they think about God when all these things are before them to experience? Maybe we are so fortunate there in the Philippines because we have nothing. We have nothing of what you have here. That's why we can always call upon God to help us. And so those people actually are like the captain of a ship who turned to his navigator and said, "Where are we headed?" Now the reply came back, "I do not know, sir, but rest assured, we are making very good time." See? You're making very good times. And perhaps, again, I would say, I'm not thinking that you are one of those people which I'm talking, but perhaps you are one of those who are making very good time going nowhere. See? God's promise, brethren, fast is sure. And so we have to look to the words of God, because in the scriptures, particularly, well, I will invite you to read Jeremiah chapter 29 and verse 11. Verse 11, "For I know the thoughts that I think toward you, says the Lord, thoughts of peace and not of evil, to give you a future and a hope." So those are the plans of God for us, brethren, plans of our welfare, and for not for calamity, and to give you a future and a hope. So in times of difficulties, like the experience of Elijah, in times of difficulties or disaster, nothing is more comforting than to learn that there is someone who knows how to get you out of your problem, and that is God. Because even to hear a doctor says, "This is serious, but we have a solution." Or to hear a financial advisor will say, "There is a way that we can work through this." Or even to say, "Someone, I know you are lost, but don't worry. We can still find out a way of your problem." So it will relieve the stress on you. And it is when the time that you find yourself overwhelmed and you don't know how to resolve your problems that you will get a sweaty palms. Your heart will beat faster and maybe sleep will elude you. Because that was the experience of God's people before. Remember that God's people before have found themselves in a situation where there is no way out of that box canyon, a dilemma that causes panic. It was during the period of world chaos, during the reign of King Hosea, when Egypt, Syria, and Babylon all wanted to control little Israel, trapped in three superpowers during the times. And God saw their tears, just like what had happened during the Exodus. God saw their tears and felt their frustration, and He responded saying, "For I know the plans that I have for you. Plans for welfare and not for calamity." That is in Jeremiah, as we have read already. "Now these words, brethren, resounds with authority. I know, and this is not the voice of a fortune teller reading tarot cards, neither the voice of one who is just pretending, a trickster that is reading your palm, because it was God who said, 'I know.'" It was He who just happened to be the one who spoke the word, and the word came into existence. And it was He who determined our genetic code at conception. And it is He also who knows what tomorrow will bring. So God says His plans are for our welfare and not for destruction, to give us a future, a hope. And that, brethren, will be fulfilled when Jesus Christ will come and restore everything through the establishment of God's kingdom. Well, maybe sometimes you will ask, how can God do this, brethren, when we have all of this chaos, of these problems, the tsunamis, the camp of Bin Laden, and all other, the terrorists, we have our own, the Abu Sayyaf. But I'm not making a discouragement with you. Just still wanted to, if Mr. Luque will not be mad at me, I am inviting you to attend the Feast of Tabernacles in the Philippines, particularly in Ponta Vilja, Iloilo. So God says His plans are for our welfare. How can He do that? Maybe sometimes we have those negative thoughts. It could not be done. But remember, brethren, about 2 months before, probably, we didn't even have in our mind that we will be in this place right now, standing before you. God could make miracles. So don't worry about those things that are happening in the world today. Because if God has plan, and He does, then His plan is to be better than yours. Because He knows the beginning from the end. All that we have to do, brethren, is to make good of the word that He had revealed to us. So our problem sometimes is that we cannot see everything. We are just like a visitor who watches a craftsman weave a tapestry and saw only on the variety of colors until he walked around and saw the right side of what the weaver is doing. Now, like that visitor, brethren, we tend to see things beneath. But God sees from above. So if God's plan is going to work for you, because we really believe that, we really believe that, we trust Him that He will do what He had promised to do for us, that welfare, that hope, that future that He is preparing for us. Then God said in the next verse here, verses 12 to 13, God said, "Then you will call upon Me and go and pray to Me, and then I will listen to you. And you will seek Me and find Me when you search for Me with all your heart." That is God's promise, brethren. That is the answer of what problems you have and my problems that we have, particularly with our brothers and sisters in the Philippines. So this is God's plan. But usually God's plan is different from ours. But God's plan will just be fulfilled, regardless whether our human logic and insights will fail.